Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Eric Wetterling, founder and editor of The Hedgeless Horseman. Now, Eric, we were chatting off mic for quite a while regarding the environment for junior resource companies, mostly junior precious metals companies. And look, we've talked about it ad nauseum for, I don't even know how long it's been now, months, on how the juniors just are not performing. Even as recently, gold, silver, they have spiked. The juniors still relatively just don't have that much interest in them, and they clearly don't have a whole lot of buyers coming in because we're just not seeing very high volume. Even when they come out with good news, at least recently we have seen some companies benefit on that back of good news, but if they come out with negative news, undoubtedly these stocks are getting hit. Eric, what do you take away from this environment that continues to be fairly tough on the juniors?
Yeah, I mean, we're still in a very fascinating environment. It's like you still see institutional buyers. You still see pretty hefty financings, and many of them get upsized. And you see, I think Newmont Mining hit an all-time high, and obviously gold has, you know, passed 2,000, or at least now it's around 2,000. So it's like everything except juniors seems to be working. So it's like the institutional money, let's say smart money, they know this is cheap. They know the juniors are cheap. So they're buying. Someone is buying the larger gold miners. So there's like the mass institutions where it's like not perhaps too gold specific, but it's like they're piling in. And you see gold ripping, and probably, I mean, I've seen coin sales, etc. up. But juniors, especially gold juniors, are still incredibly undervalued. And I guess that's just the typical retail person, the one that's buying in the open market in these stocks. They're just nowhere to be found for some reason. So I think it's, I mean, for a buyer, it's like still incredible because, like you said, it's almost a rigged game that if you have positive news, you've typically not been rewarded in the last several months. If you have bad news, you get overly punished. So it's a lose-lose situation, which is, of course, extremely frustrating because you're taking on risk for a negative outcome, and a positive outcome comes out and you get punished or you don't make that much. But if a negative outcome comes, which is probably more likely to happen in the first place, then you get really punished. So it's like it's totally rigged in a sense right now, which also speaks to just how inefficient this market is, because they're not even expensive to begin with. It's not like it's Tesla P500 that comes out with bad news. It's like a company with, you know, on PE of 2 that gets slammed because it's, you know, it's not great news, let's say. But for a buyer, knowing that this will change, because the people who are selling at these ridiculously low valuations don't care about valuations. They don't base their decision on, they don't put out a calculation like, yes, these juniors are expensive. No, they're just selling for the sake of selling, or they can't take the pain anymore, it's too boring, whatever. But those people, the ones who don't care about valuations, they will be the ones that at the sentiment peak, they'll be buying because, again, they don't care about valuation. They want to buy something that's going up and something that other people are excited about, something that's a must-have. And that's basically how much of a joke the junior sector is.
Well, Eric, it's like this. It seems like every time at a big turn in the markets, when we start seeing the metals price move up, people go look at their screen, they go running to their computers to see their junior miners go up, and then they don't move. And some of them actually sell off. But as we have pointed out before, a lot of them don't even have defined resources yet. So they haven't even proved to the world that they have gold or silver or copper in the ground yet. So that's part of it. But the other part of it is the same cycle that we see each time, where the generalists don't rotate into drill plays when they start coming over to gold and silver. You know, if people are getting into this because of inflationary pressures or Fed rate hiking or Ukraine tensions, they're not going to jump into drill plays. They're going to jump into gold and silver, the metals first, and then maybe the royalty companies like Franco-Nevada, or maybe some of the biggest miners like your Newmonts or Barricks. And those companies have started to move. A lot of those are up 30, 40, 50%. And they have got a bid. But what will eventually happen is the reverse of what you just described. As money starts coming back in the sector, people that were patient and the value investors will get rewarded. But most of the momentum traders and most of the momo speculative money is not in junior mining right now. But when it does start filtering down, you'll see companies that put out two or three bad press releases and still get rewarded because of one weird good thing that happened. So is it just a matter of waiting it out for the value investors such as yourself?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I stick to my plan. Otherwise, if I went from, you know, value investing sometimes and then turning to a trader, et cetera, then I don't have a strategy. I mean, a strategy needs to be one strategy. Otherwise, it's like, if you change, well, I buy in these conditions and I sell on other conditions, maybe they don't match. So it's like, you're always going to be, you know, if you buy low and then sell low, let's say, or whatever, it's like, for me to be a value investor, that means I'm sticking to buying cheap, selling when it's not cheap. I mean, just repeat that all over again. But if I was a trader, I wouldn't be buying some of these stocks I'm buying hand over fist right now. Then I would get in later, but then I have to stick to being a trader later because I can't switch to being a value investor and basically sell too early instead because they're too expensive too quickly or whatever. It's like probably not a good example, but I hope you get what I mean. I still think that buy and sell have to make sense as it relates to each other, basically. Otherwise, you're just going to confuse yourself and switch strategies because some guy on Twitter who's a trader said something, and then you listen to some guy who's a value investor, and he's like has an opposite view. And if you don't have a coherent strategy, that means you're probably going to bounce back and forth to whatever feels great right now. And I don't think that's a winning concept. But value investing is very... It can be very frustrating, obviously, because the whole reason you're buying is because nobody appreciates what you appreciate. And there's nothing forcing the markets to start appreciating it the day after you buy. And also what you said about the potential, et cetera, that the, you know, the risk off crowd, let's say. I mean, like right now, I mean, what's more risky? Two birds in the bush are more risky than a bird in the hand. So potential right now, like you said about the expiration place, they're basically obliterated. Nobody pays even fair value for bank success. I don't think potential success, that's like near record discounted pretty much. So I think they're super cheap.
Oh, Eric, no, nobody is giving value to potential success. But that's because, to Shad's point, people are generally scared out there, right? So why would they filter down into what you could consider the riskiest stocks in this sector? The juniors, that's just not the environment right now. But it sounds like you're okay being, let's say, wrong for a little longer, waiting for that big run to happen whenever investors feel more comfortable getting into these smaller plays.
Exactly, because the things that are the most discounted now are the things that, you know, seem too risky because nobody has an appetite for risk right now in the junior sector. It's risk off. So if I can buy a lot of potential for free, and there's a bunch of it, especially multi-asset juniors or multi-target juniors that they're selling, you know, at 30% of their, let's say, flagship target or project, and you get a whole swath of projects or targets for free. When the same people that are leaving now come in at the top when they don't care about valuation, in other words, when greed is rampant, okay, greed, aka blue sky potential. So the things that are bombed out right now because they're the most risky, that's going to be the ones that get revalued the most from bottom to peak, basically. So I'm simply front running that. And obviously, they tend to get punished more than most. But those are the ones that I think will kick in when sentiment gets really good. Again, a good example, I think, is like when sentiment was high, Garibaldi reaching 400 or 500 million pre-first assay. So imagine someone was paying $500 million almost for something that hadn't even had a discovery hole in it. And right now, the same stock, Garibaldi, you know, I don't know what the valuation is. And of course, it's a different case. But just to show the absurd extremes when we go from pricing in no potential to an extremely frothy market where nobody can pay too much for potential, let alone, you know, bank success, et cetera.
Yeah, it's a good example because right now Garibaldi is at around 50 million versus 400 to 500 million. So that's the kind of environment we're in. We had talked off mic, Eric, about a couple companies that you felt were still doing good work. Do you want to mention one of those here and just as an example?
Yeah, I mean, I really love Elora Resources. I've been buying it for weeks, pretty much, or months even, based on what I think the potential is at Santa Barbara. And they've been putting out great holds. So it's not like that's not the, you know, high risk in my opinion. But the game changer or the potential game changer is on March 1st, just 9 days ago, they put out the best hole that's yet to be drilled at Iskaiska, and that was into a huge anomaly where they think that, okay, that's a proxy, a mag anomaly, that's proxy for mineralization. So it's like, okay, you have this whopper of an anomaly. It's like, I think, easily like 1 billion tons. You put in one hole that actually goes right into it, and that's the best hole you've drilled. I mean, the AU equivalent grade of it was over 2 grams per ton. So it's like, imagine if this was a hot market and that most of the mineralization was tin, the value. But if this just to show how, let's take Garibaldi, for example. I mean, if you have a gold company, or in that case, nickel company, but has a 1 billion ton obvious target from geophysics, and you put one hole straight into it that grades 2 grams per ton gold, let's say, or 373 meters, I think that would go to 500 million in a hurry, in a good market. Elora opened up plus 6 million. It's retarded, honestly. It's like, I mean, if you do some calculations on that and use the AU equivalent, that's like a, if you have 1 billion ton potential, that's a 64 million ounce AU equivalent target. If you just take the tin portion of that hole and just, you know, project it in terms of potential over 1 billion tons, that's like 57.2 million ounces AU equivalent. Since it's tin only, I'm assuming that the recoveries would be better than if you had against like six different metals you had to get out. So it's like, it's mind-blowing in my opinion, because that's one of the biggest targets I've seen, and that was a whopper of a hole. And I don't have no idea what the market is trying to figure out, but until it figures it out, I'm buying. I'm buying, bought today. I'm buying anytime I'm getting dry powder. So I'm super biased, super bullish.
In all fairness to Elora, has done pretty well. It is not your standard junior stock. That being said, it's over $5 a share too. So Elora is definitely onto something. And I think that's actually a good example of a stock that isn't getting just crushed all the time, to be honest with you, Eric. This hasn't just been drifting down, down, down. It went through a nice pop, especially this month. So yeah, look, there are opportunities out there in the juniors, but when you get down into more of the penny juniors or the juniors under a dollar, boy, oh boy, you need to be selective. And yeah, you might need to still withstand some more downside pressure, or at least boring, painful trading in low volume times, because that's just what we're seeing right now. But overall, look, fine, there's a lot of value out there. We just need the investors to build up a little bit more confidence and get into some of the juniors, at least for all of us holding junior stocks. Eric, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. We'll chat next week. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to it. You too.